when I got into this practice, I realized people got so attached to their animals that their ability to take a step back and breathe and resolve an issue in the best interest of the animal, not to be right, but to get it right, is lost when animals are involved. It's like children. I just loved animals so much and realized I lost my perspective, and maybe I could help people gain their perspective so that they didn't forget about the pet they were arguing over just to win.
The Center for Understanding and Conflict welcomes you to The Other Chair, a monthly podcast exploring the dynamics of conflict and how to bring the human issues to the table. Together with our guests, we explore how the power of understanding each other can lead to better solutions for people on both sides of an issue. We will also share tips for managing your own mediation practice, approaching conflict in the professional world, and ways to apply our understanding-based model in your personal life. Hello to our listeners, and welcome to The Other Chair. My name is James Dykeman. Today's guest is Deborah Hamilton, the principal at Hamilton Law and Mediation, the nation's first solo mediation practice dedicated to helping people resolve conflicts over animals. Deborah uses alternative dispute resolution to help address disagreements over the family pet during divorce, neighbors' arguments over a barking dog, and confrontations between clients, veterinarians, and other professionals working with animals. Hello, Deborah, and welcome to The Other Chair.
Thank you so much for having me, James. I'm so excited to have this conversation with you today.
Wonderful. Well, I'm excited to hear all about your practice and invite our listeners to learn about what you do. The first question I just want to jump right into is, I understand you spent 30 years as a practicing litigator before becoming a full-time mediator that specializes in pet-related conflicts. How did you make the leap?
It was an interesting leap because in 2008, my husband's a banker and the banking industry crashed, as one might remember. And so I had not been working for a few years. I've been doing some litigation on the side for people, but I was not practicing as fully as I was. And then 2008, I went back full bore and realized that I wasn't really good at litigating anymore because I had been a PTA mom and found that I tried to resolve issues instead of escalate issues. So when you're a litigator, that isn't necessarily how we look to things. So I decided to take several mediation courses that taught different kinds of mediation, and then tried to mediate conflicts across the board, divorce and business and animal disputes, and then realized my heart really lay in where people are in dispute over animals because the law doesn't really address it. Animals are still considered property, and so the courts would rather die than take your animal dispute because you should just take it out in the hall. I don't know how many times I heard a judge tell me this. Mrs. Hamilton, please take it out into the hall and resolve it. Your Honor, I wouldn't be here if, in fact, I could take it out in the hall and resolve it. So I decided that I would create this mediation practice. And actually, Gary was the one who told me I should when I said to him, this is what I'm thinking of doing when I took the training for the understanding method. I said, this is what I'm thinking of doing. I'm thinking of really focusing my practice on conflicts between people over animals. And Gary looked at me and said, absolutely, go do it. Nobody's doing it. And so that's how I really got started. I was doing general mediation, and then I decided I would bite the bullet and focus on different things that people get involved with that burst into conflict that they really don't want to go to court over because nobody's going to win, especially the pet. And that it could destroy relationships. So I started studying mediation and becoming sort of the go-to person for conflicts between people over animals.
Where does your passion for pets and animals come from?
Well, that's a great question for me because my passion for animals came when I was little, when we got our first dog, German Schnauzer. Then I always had a love for horses. I was the typical girl with a horse. I would take horseback riding lessons all the time. I actually had a horse who just passed away 2 years ago. And for me, animals were the most heart-based pieces of my life. You know, they were the ones I talked to. They were the ones I told all my stories to. I chose the Irish setter to breed and to show along with the long-haired dachshund. And those animals really gave me, I always say, grooming a dog is my knitting. Some people knit, some people, you know, needlepoint, some people read books. I go into the kennel and I groom my dogs because that's how I release stress. So dogs and horses, and I even had birds and fish. I haven't had reptiles. Oh no, I had reptiles too. We had bearded dragons. So we've had turtles, we've had everything. And I really love the fact that people get so attached to their animals. And when I got into this practice, I realized people got so attached to their animals that their ability to take a step back and breathe and resolve an issue in the best interest of the animal, not to be right, but to get it right, is lost when animals are involved. It's like children. So that's how I got involved. I just loved animals so much and realized I lost my perspective and maybe I could help people gain their perspective so that they didn't forget about the pet they were arguing over just to win.
Conflict manifests itself in many ways in our personal lives, for professionals in the workplace and for practitioners who have made a career bringing together parties in conflict through mediation practice. Each month, the Center for Understanding and Conflict hosts live webinars with featured guests discussing best practices and sharing their experiences for tackling conflict using the understanding-based model. I understand that a lot of our listeners probably are familiar with mediation as it relates to the courts in a general family setting. How does the mediation process change when pets are in the middle? Is this like a custody battle over children, as you mentioned, or is there more nuance to it?
Well, I would like to say that the court has progressed enough to send cases that come before it to mediation before they accept it to trial. However, mediation is a voluntary process. People have to agree to do it. There isn't a lot of belief that when people are arguing over a pet, that mediation might work. It does. However, it hasn't become mainstream yet. And I think that in the scheme of things, if we can mediate before causes of action are brought, litigation is brought, we have a greater chance of resolving it in the best interests of the animal and the people than if we litigate, because then it might be all about winning and being right as opposed to getting it right. I just talked to a group of people who are insurance practitioners, and I said to them, why is it required for a person who has a disagreement with a veterinarian to sue first before you'll allow the veterinarian and the client to participate in mediation? And the attorneys came back and said, there's nothing to talk about until you sue, because they, you know, the rubber has to meet the road. They have to put their money where their mouth is. And I said, yes, but we're creating that loss of resolution dynamic that I think is there at the beginning. And once I hire an attorney, unless the attorney is well-trained in alternative dispute resolution and conflict conversations that don't escalate, these things escalate and then they can't be settled. I had cases where I thought it should settle right away and it dragged on for a month. And by then the client is like, well, I'm taking him to the woodshed. And he never wanted to take him to the woodshed at the beginning, but after being ignored and ignored or pushed off and pushed off, then they get angry and then things escalate. As we all know, if somebody ignores us, things escalate. If we can address it early, things don't necessarily escalate.
In your blog, you talk about the understanding-based approach to mediation, and you've also mentioned the founder for the Center for Understanding and Conflict, Gary Friedman, and some training that you had done when you decided to make this transition from being a litigator. How does the understanding-based model differ from traditional approaches, especially when dealing with conflicts over animals?
I think it's because we are able to hold a safe space in the room to allow the parties to tell us their story. And we understand their story. And in doing that, we enable the other party to hear it in a different way. And if people need to tell us more, we ask them more. We ask them to tell us more. We ask them to give us more information. We ask them to reflect on what they just said. Tell me what you think about what you just said and how that might affect everyone. In the understanding-based model, we try to understand where each party is coming from and help them in turn understand where the other party is coming from so that we can have a resolution that meets the needs of everyone, especially the pet. Let's understand what's best for both of us, but also what's best for the pet. So for me, the understanding-based model hit home for me because I never wanted to be the person in the room telling people what to do. I wanted to learn language and processes that have people, as we know in the understanding-based model, go down the V. You can't go from the problem to the solution because there's so much emotion there that you have to really go down the V, visit all of the issues that are arising, all the feelings that people have, all the interests that people have and the outcome they're holding on to, and then be able to move toward a solution once they feel as if their interests, their needs, their point of view, their perspectives are heard, respected, understood. And then we move to, I always like to say, Bill Urey's statement, which is the third way. You know, there's the my way, your way, and the third way. And I think that's what the understanding-based model always does. It always finds that way that makes everyone feel as if, I hate when people refer to mediation and, well, we both missed out on things and, you know, we both were unhappy when we left. That's not the kind of mediation I practice. I want everybody to feel good when they leave, that they resolve the issue in the best interests of themselves and their animal, and that the animal will thrive and they'll thrive.
Great. I know that in the understanding-based approach, the goal is to bring together two parties in the foundation of understanding one another and their humanity. Could you talk a little bit more in depth about that third party, which in this case is a pet, and it's not a human, but it still has very much an interest in the outcome, and an animal's life can be irreparably harmed or enriched depending on the outcome. How do you take into consideration the pet as one of the parties?
Well, I always use, you know, our big post-it note boards and put up what are the interests of the pet to one member of the family and what's the interest of the pet to the other member of the family, or if they're competing, a kennel and an owner or a veterinarian and an owner, what are our competing interests? What are we here to talk about? We address that. And then I always say to them, if it's a divorce, unfortunately, your pet doesn't hate your ex. So though you may think that you are the better caregiver for the pet, the fact that when you're not home, the pet treats that person like the, you know, God they are, has to be recognized. And if in fact you're given the total ownership of a pet, but you might not have a steady job, you might not, you know, be able to afford the vet care, you may not be able to afford the food. So when the dog is given to A, because A spends more time with the dog, and that's what the judge decides is in the best interest of the pet, you don't consider the best interest of the pet long-term, which is what happens to A if they get sick and they can't care for the dog? What happens to A if they lose their job, lose their house, and can't keep the dog? Does B get the opportunity to help financially take the dog if it needs to be placed, whatever it is? That conversation in litigation is never had because judges and courts don't want to go into custody battles. They just want to make a decision and move forward. But with pets, it really is important to make sure that you focus the parties on, yes, there's going to be a determination here. And it's up to you whether or not it's a determination that's going to be in the best interests of this pet as you see it, not as the judge sees it or as a mediator sees it who's more directive, but rather in the understanding based, we sit down and talk about how you see this pet thriving going forward. Explain that to us and really recognize and respect that there are two views to seeing this. And what's the view that we can come out of this discussion with that will help the pet thrive long term and short term?
Throughout the year, the Center for Understanding and Conflict hosts in-depth, basic, and advanced certificate programs designed to train you to become effective mediators and conflict resolution professionals centered in the understanding-based model. Our training programs have been the gold standard in alternative dispute resolution for 40 years and is popular within the legal community with human resource professionals, ombudsmen, and corporate workplace mediation clients.
I'm sure you probably have 1,000 examples based on your experience, but is there one story of a successful mediation that has stuck with you through the years?
I think it was really the first one I ever had. I've had so many, but this first one, of course, when you are doing mediation, you know, some of the first ones you do leave you with, oh, I did really badly, or oh, I did really great, or I did say what I was supposed to say, or I didn't say what I was supposed to say. But there's one that just turned out so beautifully. And if you had asked me at the beginning whether or not these people would resolve this issue, I would say no, because they kept stealing the dog out of each other's backyards in last out. So you would, you know, let the dog out to go to the bathroom and somebody would jump over the fence, grab the dog and drive away, but not like drive away down the street, drive away into Canada. And the dog was in Virginia. So the dog would be stolen from Canada and returned to Virginia, or stolen from Virginia and driven back to Canada. So one of the parties called me and said, you know, I'd like to stop doing this. And I said, I really think you should. Not good for the pet, and probably is breaking some international law somewhere. So maybe you want to try to resolve this. And it took us about a year and a half to work it out. And we were almost to a resolution, but because of the understanding-based model and because of how Gary Friedman and Jack Himmelstein and the rest of the crew at CUC teach, you really want to make sure that you check in with everyone, that they are on board with the resolution. And when I checked in, I didn't get the deep feeling that everyone was on board with the resolution. And so what I love about the understanding-based model is that we take a breath, we take a moment. We don't have to finish in 2 hours. This took quite longer than 2 hours. However, it was the most sustained resolution that was so disorganized and disproportionately angry that I ever worked on, and it stuck. And these two people actually agreed to speak to a news outlet. I wasn't speaking to them because, of course, you know, mediation is a confidential process, so I'm not speaking to anybody. And they called me and said, we'd like to speak to this TV station because we want to talk about what you do. And I said, well, you can talk about the process. I said, you don't have to talk about me. I said, but you both have to agree to talk together. And they did. And I think that was the one that really was impactful to me, because they were so at odds, so hurt because the relationship broke up, so upset about not being able to have the dog with them full time, and working on a resolution that absolutely was in the best interest of the dog, because it wasn't like a month on, a month off, a week on, a week off. It was like 6 months on, 6 months off. And then they had a health crisis. So they called me to help them work out the health crisis, which left the dog with one longer and then left the dog with the other longer on the other end. It really was something that I felt, wow, I think that was probably the mediation that told me I was on the right path. Because if I could resolve the animosity and anger that was between these two people for this dog, then I could probably help other people in the same way, either if they're angry at their veterinarian or they're angry at their groomer or their husband or their kids or whomever, the breeder. It's about being able to find a way to let them feel heard and understood, and the perspectives and perceptions to be appreciated in order for us to move forward.
That's an amazing story. Would it be possible for you to talk a little bit more? I think it's an amazing example that these two individuals that were so at odds to the point of kidnapping their pet and taking it over out of the country would be able to be brought together in such a way that not only was there a resolution, but they wanted to sing it from the mountaintops. That's very impressive. Could you explain a little bit more about why you think, or what about the process impacted them so much that that's how they responded?
I think it's because in the understanding-based model, we keep everybody together. So we don't form perceived allegiances when we caucus, right? So I never caucused with anyone. I really was out there holding a safe space for both of them. So they both saw me understanding how the other one thought and reframing and looping the other person, so they could hear it differently. Because we all know when we're in conflict, whatever you say, you're going to hear through your own lens, through your own bias. And when I would loop, I would do it in a way, looping meaning just making sure I heard you correctly. And was this what you know, were saying, and using their language or not, maybe rephrasing it, but making sure that you held their attention, both parties, to what was being said. And it created this aha moment for them over and over again, because as we know, people in conflict, especially people in conflict for a long time, have their triggers, have their go-tos, have their perceptions of what James is doing when he says that or does that. I mean, all married couples know that, you know, when your wife or husband says something, it's because of this. And it could be not at all about that, but you've, you know, so built up this, you know, yin and yang that you really have to get a grasp on what it is that you're going to let go or not let go, or you're going to stop misperceiving, so to speak, and just let it go. And I think that's where they were. Everything they did was a slight, a slight, a slight until I got involved and they realized they both were thinking of what was in the best interest of the dog. And that's what started that trajectory to be able to choose what would be best for the dog, because one of the parties ran all the time and the dog loved to run and that was wonderful. And then the other party didn't run so much and was more of a cuddler and, you know, pamperer. And we got to a point where the runner recognized the dog appreciated being pampered and he wasn't really a pamperer. And the woman realized that, well, you know, the dog really likes to run a lot. So probably running is good for him. I once had a couple who, she was a triathlete and he loved watching football. And they had a Rhodesian Ridgeback and they were at odds. And I said, what does the Rhodesian Ridgeback do when the football's on? She goes, well, he sits up like he's a person and eats Cheetos with my husband. And I said, so the dog really enjoys that. She goes, yeah. I said, well, let's think about that. So if the dog really enjoys that, he also enjoys running and swimming and biking with you. Is there only one way that dog wants to live? And that was when the light went on. And I think that was when the light went on with these two people, in that the dog really thrived with both of them. And it wasn't an either or, it was an and.
This podcast is supported by our CUC Connect members, whose yearly membership includes free attendance to our live monthly webinars, 12 additional featured recordings of past training events, discounts to our basic and advanced training programs, and support from our network of certified trainers for continued professional development. Consider joining CUC Connect today and dive deeper into the understanding-based model.
If somebody's already a mediator and they're interested in incorporating more about pet specific mediation, I understand you're very active on social media. You have a blog, you have your own long running podcast talking about these issues. You're constantly sharing about other events and activities in the community. How could people begin, and in what ways are you available to help them?
Well, I'm always available. My husband gets very mad when I say that, but I'm always available to help people. He goes, yes, but this is your niche. Why are you giving it away? And I said, because I live in abundance. I really think there are more people at issue over animals, and animals suffer when they're at issue over animals, than I can handle. So if I can educate mediators and attorneys on how to de-escalate, have conscious conversations, take everything that someone says. Like today, I just had a call with someone whose dog is ill and they want to sue the breeder. And I said, well, let's take a step back and think about what it is the end game is here for us. And so she said, wow, I didn't even think of that. I didn't even think about what would be in the best interest of the dog. I didn't think about what it would cost us. I just wanted to be right. And I think what I impart to new mediators or litigators is your client really has a story, and so does the other client. And you're not doing anyone a service if you don't fully listen to the other stories, perspectives, and perceptions, because you might find that there is a parallel there that you can really work with. But once you get in there, and unfortunately, people will spend a lot of money to win disagreements over animals, especially with breeders or breeders with owners. It's just, I've got to be right. I have got to be right. My contract says this, and I have got to be right. And through mediation and alternative dispute resolution, and especially the understanding-based model, we understand that that's your interest, that's your need. And what is it that we can do to help you feel as if you are being heard and respected and understood for your need, and also the animal to be treated in a way that's going to make it thrive. So for people who want to get into this, you really have to love animals. You really have to have the patience of Job, because people who, when somebody said to me, God, you know, that is such an incredible niche you're in. And if you speak to divorce attorneys, most of them will say the worst case they ever had was when a pet was involved in the discussion, because 9 out of 10 times people presume the pet is going to go to A and not B. And I always, as I said before, I always say, you know, unfortunately, your pet doesn't hate your ex. And if something happens to you, the pet would probably choose your ex over anybody else in the room because that's who they know. So why do you cut them out of the discussion? So most of the attorneys who've handled these cases said, oh my God, those people are crazy. They can't even talk to each other. They're unreasonable. They're this. I said, no, it's like they're kids, especially in a family that doesn't have any children, that these are their children. They have 3 or 4 of them. And then one absconds because they believe, well, I bought the dog, or the dog came into the relationship with me. I've been here 8 years, so I'm taking the dog with me. And we sit there and talk about how the pet feels, because the pet doesn't realize that you have the sales slip with your name on it. And now the courts are really parsing things. So you're so much better off not in court than in court, because they're parsing things. Ownership isn't necessarily a set of AKC papers with your name on it, or a contract or a rescue contract with your name on it, or vet bills that you've paid, or food bills that you've paid, or, you know, pictures with you at the beach with the dog, meaning that you're always out with the dog. All of these are taken into consideration, but one isn't dispositive any longer. And now in New York, the domestic relations law has another consideration for judges to do, which is what's in the best interest of the pet. And I said, oh my God, they need to do this like they need a hole in their head, which is why I'm hoping to, you know, write some more articles and speak some more to convince judges and divorce attorneys that this one issue is better served in an ADR situation than in a court situation. Because no matter what, the pet loses in a court situation, because people can't walk away knowing that if something fell through the cracks, that they would be there to pick up the dog if something happened. We're in ADR. We can always provide for visitation. We can provide for remainder people. We can provide for shared, you know, financial issues. The court's not going to do that. They're going to say, okay, James, you get the dog. Deborah, you don't get the dog. And we walk away. And if James falls on hard times, there's no ability to have him call me and say, I really need financial help. I have to move and I can't find an apartment that allows dogs. This is something that is not yet built into the law. And I'm hoping to facilitate the conversation where, you know, we will not go to court, but rather we'll go to mediation.
Our listeners only come away with one piece of advice, one takeaway from today's episode. What would you want them to remember most when it comes to disputes over their furry friends and family?
Take a breath and focus on what's best for the animal. And don't presume that what one party says is dispositive of what's best for the animal. It is really in your best interest to hire an ADR professional, and there are many of them out there because I've trained them, who is really responsive to the differences in pet relationships with their owners. And although you might not walk it and you might not feed it, it would still benefit from having everyone talk about what's in its best interest when you're coming to breaking up or a contract dispute or a veterinarian's dispute or kennel or groom or whatever. It always is better to focus on not being right or wrong, but getting it right for the pet.
Thank you so much, Deborah, for being here today for our listeners. And for myself as a pet lover, I'm so honored to speak with someone who's out there doing this important work. I know that you are considered an expert in this field, and animals don't often get the same seat at the table as pet owners would and may fall through the cracks. It sounds like the court system doesn't even acknowledge them as anything beyond property, which anyone who knows and loves animals absolutely wouldn't agree with. And so thank you so much for the work that you're doing and for being here today.
Well, I'm so grateful to be here, and I look forward to listening to more of the episodes. They've been great so far.
Deborah Hamilton is the principal at Hamilton Law and Mediation and author of the best-selling book, Nipped in the Bud, Not in the Butt, How to Use Mediation to Resolve Conflicts Over Animals. She is also the host of the long-running podcast, Why Do Pets Matter?
Thank you to today's guest for being with us today and to our CUC Connect members, whose support enables the Center for Understanding and Conflict to bring new perspectives in the field of conflict resolution and mediation to you, our listener, in each new episode. You can find out more about today's episode, along with full interviews and additional information about conflict resolution and mediation using the understanding-based model at www.understandinginconflict.org.